How has pop American Christianity replaced the Holy Trinity with the unholy trinity of me, myself, and I? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Has American Christianity Failed? It's written by regular guest Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Has American Christianity Failed? Is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or find out more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Has American Christianity Failed? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're watching the Olympics. The stories just come fast and furious, and a lot of the coverage there, of course, because you've got a lot of time to fill, are human interest. They're telling the stories of the athletes. They're telling us about their lives, their road to Rio de Janeiro, so to speak. How much was religion a part of some of that path traveled by these world-class athletes to Rio de Janeiro and to possible gold, silver, or bronze medals? How's the media doing in covering religion at the Olympics? Joining us to answer that question on this Wednesday afternoon, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
We often talk about religion ghosts in journalism. I'd like you to explain what a religion ghost is again. And then this question for you, Terry. Are sports journalists any better than your average news journalist when it comes to the religion ghosts?
Okay, well, first of all, the concept of religion ghost was central to the founding of Get Religion 12 years ago. And the basic idea there is that there are stories that happen all the time in the media that you simply can't understand them, or you can't tell the story completely unless you explore the role that religion played in them. I always tell the story of Dr. Martin Marty, the extremely influential church historian, author of, what, at this point, 60-something books or something. Martin Marty and I spoke on a panel soon after 9/11, and Marty had brought with him a copy of the Chicago Tribune that he picked up in the airport as he flew to this event at the University of Nebraska. And as a part of his presentation on why religion was essential to understanding the news, he simply took this copy of the Chicago Tribune and he went through it page by page looking for stories that involved religion. And basically, he found religion from the front page all the way to the back, including the business section, you know, in terms of things that were happening in the Middle East involving religion that were affecting gas prices. At the end of his presentation, Marty said, in a post-9/11 world, it's better to ask what stories don't involve religion than what stories do. So that said, a ghost is an essential piece of religious information or a main theme of a story that if you don't include it, you haven't really covered the story. The problem, of course, is Bill Moyers, the CBS commentator and former White House press secretary, Bill Moyers, you know, told me years ago, the problem is that the mainstream press is basically tone deaf when it comes to hearing the music of religion and how it affects life in our culture. So that's what a ghost means. A ghost is a religious element of a story that the press didn't spot. So at Get Religion, we talk all the time about stories being haunted. You know, you read the story, you can sense that something else is going on, but you don't know what, based on the facts you've been given. Now, your question, are sports reporters any better at spotting this than others? Well, on one level, you'd have to say no. I mean, just in the sense that the world of sports, you know, is just as secularized in terms of a lot of the coverage as anything else. But I will say that they have a chance to see these subjects kind of shoved in their face, and the religion subjects shoved in their face, and to some degree that might even become part of the problem. In sports, you're dealing with lots of young people, you're dealing with young adults, you're dealing with people from all across the country, as opposed to kind of the elites that tend to dominate media coverage in the American Northeast or on the left coast. So you tend to have lots of red zip code Americans and people from flyover country that end up standing in front of microphones, And these people often talk about religion a lot. To some degree, this has created a kind of stereotypical religious reference that must drive a lot of reporters crazy. And this is simply the, you know, you put the microphone in the face of this person who's just won a famous race or he's just scored the winning touchdown in a bowl game, and the first thing he or she says is, "I'd like to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ who has made all this possible." And then they go into their answer. Well, I think a lot of journalists have simply assumed that all religion in the world of sports dwells at that kind of play the God card to explain why you won a game kind of level. So I think there are a lot of sports reporters who, quite frankly, are very cynical about the kind of Jesus help me win this game approach, which, by the way, is often, or usually in my experience, not what these athletes are actually saying. What I have found through the years is the more serious the religious believer involved in sports, the less likely they are to say, "Jesus helped me win this game." They may say something like, I'd like to thank God for me being allowed to do my best and that, you know, nobody got hurt here today. And I'd like to thank Christ for my life, you know, not winning this game. So anyway, so that cynicism, I think, affects some of the coverage in sports, and I think that's kind of sad.
When is religion essential to tell a sports story?
Well, let me give you a good example just based on the Olympics. If you're going to try to tell the story of how athletes overcame adversity or came from extremely difficult backgrounds and yet they've managed to bounce back or to do their best, when you start talking about, "I'm going to explain to you why the following athlete ticks, what makes them work as a person," the minute you say that about a lot of American athletes, you're going to find out that religion is often in there somewhere. So I call this this kind of story is the "I'm going to explain this person to you" story. And if that person, when they tell their own story, religion plays a major role, then what's the excuse for their faith not playing a major role in a media representation of this person telling their life story? Does that make any sense?
Do you have any examples from the recent coverage, blanket coverage of the Summer Olympics?
Well, you're right. The Olympics are kind of the political convention for the world of sports, or more aptly, the political conventions are the Olympics for political reporters. You have all kinds of people from all kinds of culture, and religion is a part of the diversity. You have other moral issues going on at the Olympics, which I sometimes wish people would cover. You know, I mean, like the thousands of condoms it takes to be able to keep the athletes safe during these games, and you hardly ever see that covered. The one that caught my attention this year, there are lots of religious believers involved in the games, and some of them are getting appropriate coverage. I think the story of the hijab-wearing fencer on the U.S. team, Ibtihaj Muhammad, I think we're actually seeing some pretty decent coverage of her and the role her faith plays in her life and how she kind of fits into the American sports scene. I'm not terribly sure that automatically makes her, as some journalists have called her, the face of the American team. She's certainly a very important figure, and this is a very important story, and journalists should cover it. I think if you were picking the face of the American team, you would pick the person that the team chose to carry the flag, and that's, for better or for worse, Michael Phelps is in some ways the face of this team. And then we've had several other athletes who have emerged as just superstars in their fields. And there you're talking about Katie Ledecky in the pool, in various forms of swimming. And Simone Biles leaps to mind, the glowing 5'8" powerhouse at the heart of the women's gymnastics team, would certainly be on anyone's list of people who are going to end up on a Wheaties box, you know, after this thing. In each of those cases, you have very interesting religious stories going on. I mean, in Katie Ledecky and Simone Biles, you're dealing with very devout Roman Catholics. I don't know if you've seen any of the images that sometimes they catch Simone Biles with her rosary, you know, at certain points during competition or during the green room waiting to go on, or the, you know, she's a very devout Catholic, and her life story, of course, is very compelling. Very troubled mother. She ends up, her grandparents adopt her. They are legally her mom and dad, adopt her so that she doesn't end up being kind of handed over as a ward of the state. And they can't, you know, they can't get to her, and then they raise this amazing young woman. And at the heart of all that is her faith. Katie Ledecky is just as outspoken about her Catholicism, if not more so. And this is the young woman who's emerging as the star of the women's swimming team for the U.S. So I could go on and on, but the Phelps case is the one I wrote about today at Get Religion. And Phelps, of course, I'm from Baltimore, so I've been, you know, I spent the last 10 years in Baltimore before moving to Oak Ridge, I should say. And Phelps is from Baltimore, and you just get blanket wall-to-wall coverage on everything that goes on with Michael Phelps when you live in the Baltimore, D.C. area. And Phelps has had a very troubled life in recent years. And finally, he opened up and talked about it. He ended up in rehab after his second DUI. He's had to face issues with his father. He was openly suicidal at the time they sent him into rehab. His life was messed up. I mean, this is someone who's gone from the highest pinnacle of world sports to being suicidal. And in the midst of telling that story to ESPN recently, an interesting figure popped up, and that is the legendary, soon-to-be in the Hall of Fame, Baltimore Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis. And if you know anything about Ray Lewis, Sports Illustrated once put him on the cover as God's linebacker. Anything that involves Ray Lewis is going to, A, involve his own messed up private life from earlier in his life, and B, it's going to center on his religious faith. Well, in the midst of all that, he gave Michael Phelps a copy of The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren. And Phelps started reading it in rehab and started immediately calling Ray Lewis over and over, according to Ray Lewis and according to Phelps, the two people on both ends of the phone line, phone calls, I should say, that this book became very central to his recovery, that he began to realize that the whole world wasn't on his shoulders. He might have some purpose to go on living in his life. Now, I have no idea what the current state of religious faith is in the life of Michael Phelps. But he talked about that book and its role in his recovery for several minutes in that ESPN special. You would think someone doing a background check on writing a story about how Michael Phelps recovered from his train wreck of a life and made it back to Olympic gold, I would think someone has a good chance of running into that element of the Michael Phelps story. And the Los Angeles Times simply didn't. They, in baseball terms, they whiffed on that subject, which is even more amazing in the sense that if you're the Los Angeles Times, where does Rick Warren live? The answer is Orange County, California. In effect, they blew the local angle of the Phelps story. They had a chance to say, you know, a major figure in American religion, who's right here in our own backyard, his book played a major role in the recovery of this iconic sports legend from suicide-level depression and alcoholism to being back in the pool winning, you know, and having a new baby in his life, and his longtime girlfriend has turned into his fiance, and he's struggling to get his life back together. He's been reconciled with his father, who's the divorce, you know, half of the divorce that rocked his childhood, and he says was at the heart of his depression and his self-image problems. That sounds like that's a fairly important religion angle, wouldn't you think?
After the break, we're going to have Terry compare and contrast a Washington Post story and an Indianapolis Star story on some medalists in Rio de Janeiro for the religion angle. Stay tuned.
Cradled in historic Perry County, Missouri, the manger of the Missouri Synod, Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 453 Northwest Street in Perryville proclaims God's Word and celebrates His Supper on Saturdays at 5:30 and Sundays at 7:30 and 10 using the church's liturgy contained in Lutheran Service Book, enriched with ancient and modern hymns. For more information, call 573-547-8317 or visit www.emmanuel-perryville.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest, talking about media coverage of religion at the Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. Terry, is part of the problem here just not going deeply enough? You talk about there being layers to stories, and sometimes those layers are left uncovered. You compare and contrast a Washington Post story and an Indianapolis Star story, saying that both of the stories on the some recent medalists in diving down in Rio de Janeiro are true. So what's the difference between the two?
Well, that we're talking about the silver medal in 10-meter platform, synchronized diving. And I'm not quite sure how to pronounce one of the names, David Abodia and Steele Johnson. Well, Steele Johnson is a very interesting case, a young man who almost died at the age of 12 when he hit his head on the concrete platform doing a dive that is a dive he still has to do today in most competitions, and tore his skull open, half of scalp ripped off. You know, his coach sank to the bottom of the pool. His coach dove in and managed to literally hold his head together, but still today is suffering brain damage in terms of memory, short-term and long-term memory loss. Well, Steele Johnson has never talked openly about this before, and the Washington Post did a piece on his recovery because he put up a YouTube video where he's basically just looking into a camera, and it's called The Accident. And in this, he explains, he said, I've decided I have to talk about this because I've been ignoring my scars too long. Of course, he's referring to the scars that go all the way across the top of his head under his hair. But in the end, he says that basically he came to realize that God wanted him to understand that you can't heal scars unless you open them up and you be honest about them. Well, the other figure in that story, Davis Bodia, is a gold, Olympic gold from the London, who left London, began to say, okay, is this it? Is this all there is in life? What's going to happen to me? Sinks into depression, alcoholism, etc., and literally becomes a Christian, gets married, has a child, pulls his life together, takes this young Steele Johnson guy under his arm as his protege, and the two of them march into the synchronized diving. Now, it's very hard to beat China at this point in synchronized diving, but these guys won silver, and they're both now going to be major players in the individual competitions as well. The Indianapolis Star wrote the religion angle into its piece, perhaps because they're writing for readers in Indiana, in flyover country. The Washington Post, in its piece on Steele Johnson, left the religion angle out altogether. Now, I noted that that could be because the writer who wrote that piece literally does not appear to be in Rio. So to cut them some slack, they maybe didn't have a chance to interview Steele Johnson and David Bodia for that piece. But at the same time, the religious element is clearly there in the video which accompanied the Washington Post piece. So once again, we have to raise this question. If these sports figures, when they're telling their own story, when they weave their religious faith into a part of that story, why isn't it part of news stories that are written about why they are the people they are and why they do what they do. It's just a question I don't know the answer to, but it's it goes beyond a blind spot. We're talking about stuff that's right there in the public statements, yet it's being ignored.
With a couple minutes here, Terry, sports reporting is kind of, it comes in two forms. It comes in the storytelling about the athletes or the teams or the coaches themselves. But it also comes in just, you know, facts and figures and statistics. And I'm wondering whether or not, because it has that aspect to it, that human story aspect to it, whether or not a sports journalist, for lack of a better word, are kind of especially culpable when they leave the religion ghost haunting the story.
No, I think it's true in all human stories of this kind, whether you're dealing with someone who's had a long bout with cancer, and you could be writing about people who work in hospice. I've hardly ever met a hospice professional that religious faith wasn't deep in there somewhere. You run into religion all the time. Maybe in the case of sports, it's a little more obvious in that, like I said, you have this, I want to thank Jesus for my talents situation. And I think sports reporters, to repeat my earlier point, I think they have a tendency to get cynical about this. So I don't think it makes them more culpable. It's bad to leave essential material out of any story. But I think, ironically, people follow the lives of their sports heroes so closely that I think it may hurt credibility for a lot of sports reporters. Because out there in the public, there are people reading about these young men and women, and they're going, wait a minute, I'm a Catholic, and Catholic news right now is just blanket coverage of these young women and the role their faith plays in their life. Why aren't I seeing that on NBC? Why am I not seeing that in the New York Times? Why am I not seeing that in the Washington Post? Sports fans have other information available to them. So I think to some degree, these ghosts are often easier to spot because, frankly, they're covered in other media.
Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss original sin and the for you of Christianity with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Has American Christianity Failed? These two subjects, original sin and the for you of Christianity, actually go perfectly together. The depth of sin and the absolute sheer grace of Jesus Christ, law and gospel. We'll talk that with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller tomorrow. We'll also get a review of the movie Suicide Squad with Pastor Ted Giese. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.